This is Legislative Review on Prairie Public. Thanks for joining us. We're on our digital platform and on our radio platform. I'm Dave Thompson. I'm joined today by the House Majority Leader, Representative Chet Pollard from Carrington. Representative Pollard, thanks for being here.
You bet. Thank you, Dave. Appreciate the invitation.
This has been an odd session because it's felt a little different with people remotely, with remote testimony, a lot of video things, a lot less clutter in the Capitol. I'm trying to figure out, from your perspective, what are you thinking? What are you seeing?
Well, you know, Dave, I'm one of those that actually likes the clutter because I'm also one of those that believe that the best legislation is where we're facing each other eye to eye. You know, us legislators are here. Some folks have the option of Microsoft teaming in, which some of them do because they got concerns about COVID-19 and they have some underlying conditions. But for myself, I had to introduce a bill, you know, as chairman of legislative management. And so I introduced the bill and I was asked my thoughts as far as how the audio video is working, because we put a lot of money into it to make this available so we can meet. And I said, it's best if we're eye to eye. Yes, it gives us the option, like what you and I are doing today, Dave. I'm fine with that. But truthfully, Dave, I'd rather talk to you face to face.
I think we all kind of feel the same way. We like to see, once the pandemic is over, to get back to some semblance of normal, and there would be more face to face in-person conversations.
You know, we legislators have to have an interaction with citizens, whether it's back home or if they come in here and testify. And the same way with folks who represent business interests, such as a GNDA or the Chamber of Commerce or the Catholic Charities or whoever. It's just best if they're there. So, you know, the halls aren't as busy. There's not as many, so it's got a different feeling. There's no doubt about that.
Do you think that the pace of work has been affected by this?
I would say no, it has not. You know, we started the first week of the session with 45-minute floor sessions and the rest going into committee, because as an example, the Judiciary Committee has over 90 bills. You know, I think GVA was around 60 bills, somewhere around there. So these folks got a lot of work to do. But at the same time, then we went to our floor sessions. Next week, we go to an hour and a half because, you know, our goal is to hear all the bills, make sure they're fully vetted, and then get to crossover. And doing that, that's fair to everybody. You know, so you'll see these floor session hours change too as well. So we're still going about our work. Some folks are Microsoft teaming in, or they're Zooming in some of the folks who give testimony, you know, and so we've got to watch it with COVID-19. You know, we've got our mask rules, and basically overall, I think people are doing the, you know, pretty fairly well. Sometimes they'll forget, you know, the committees, they've got to meet, they've got to get these bills done, because if we don't get done, you know, normally we're done somewhere around April 25th. And if we have to quarantine for 14 days, that's why these rules are in place. Then all of a sudden we're to the middle of May. And if we have to do it twice, then we're till the end of May, you know, and a lot of these folks are farmers or in the agriculture business, and that won't work as well. But, you know, we've only had a couple cases of people who had to go home and quarantine or close contact. But we also have to be very cognizant of the fact this place doesn't run without legislative council staff. You know, those folks are doing the bill drafting if there's amendments to be done. So this is a process where all the gears and cogs have to work. And so if we would lose two or three legislative council staff people in these committees, that's quite a deal. You just don't bring somebody in off the street to start drafting legislation, you know. So yeah.
And you can see where the bottlenecks would happen, is what you're saying.
Oh, very much so. Yes. Yep.
Let me ask you about one of the big issues of the session, at least from some of us who have been watching. We thought that bonding is going to be a big issue. Are we correct? Do you think that's one of the top issues that you're going to be dealing with?
You know, as far as I'm concerned, Dave, and I've kind of been that way forever, the budget, revenues, and forecasts, those are on the top of the list. But bonding is definitely in the top seven, you know. So you bet, if I'm correct, those bonding bills will get a hearing, I think, next week. I don't remember what day, Tuesday or Wednesday or Monday or Tuesday or something like that. So, but that will be a big issue, yes.
Is there a lot of resistance in your caucus to doing any kind of bonding?
You know, our caucus is pretty big. As you know, there's 80 Republicans. Some of those folks are very amenable to bonding. There's some of those folks who will do a pile of bonding. And there's folks on the other end who don't want to bond at all. And then there's folks like me who are somewhere in the middle saying, yes, we've got to do some of this stuff. You know, some of the concerns I have, as you know, Dave, revenues are down. I mean, oil prices are down. Oil production is down. You know, the economy because of COVID-19 nationally is way down. And those are concerns. And so folks are looking to still continue the spending habits that we've done when money's been good. Now the general funds aren't there. So where are they looking at? They're looking at the legacy fund earnings. And as you and I have talked in the hallways off and on with our masks, that we have to be careful, because I'm one of those that believe the voters of North Dakota put the legacy fund, not for now, not for 3 or 4 or 5 years from now, but down the road a generation. And we've got to be careful about that, because this is oil revenues that have gone into this legacy fund. And as you know, with the current administration, there's big changes coming. And we've got to be ready for that, because with technology and that, maybe black electrons aren't the thing of the future 30, 40 years from now. So we've got to make sure these legacy funds are available. Like, I think it's Norway that's got all those dollars in huge reserves. Our legacy fund with $7-8 billion is a pittance, I'm not saying it's a pittance, but compared to Norway, big difference. So, and that's how they fund a lot of their stuff with their government. So,
but our fund is somewhat similar in that it's a sovereign wealth fund, and it's being invested in various places. And one thing that might be coming out of the session is investing up to, I think it's 20% of the fund in local projects, in North Dakota projects. Is that something that you're behind at this point?
Yeah. Well, here's what I'll say about that, Dave. It's generated a lot of interest. The bill that's going to be introduced next week, you know, it's already in bill form. It's at 20%. During the interim, I know the insurance commissioner threw out the idea of 10%. Well, that 10% went to 20% and go into North Dakota. And as you're probably aware too, you know, the State Investment Board, I think it's at $300 million. They have that option to go that high already without that bill. And I think they moved it up another $100 million to up to $400 million. But yet folks haven't taken advantage of that yet. And so now there's an opportunity or a bill out there to go to 20%. So I'm not a sponsor on that bill. I have concerns about the prudent investment rule. And I know that the sponsors of the bill have put a lot of time and changed wording on it, trying to get to that point where it would suffice for that meeting. But there's still a lot of discovery that's got to happen on that, you know, so.
I have a feeling you're right. That issue coupled with what else are you going to do with the proceeds from the legacy fund, those seem to go hand in hand, and bonding goes hand in hand with that. There are a lot of pretty very high issues that are coming up very soon.
Well, and Dave, we've got a bill in there that Representative Schmidt and myself brought forward under $800 million, and the greatest share of that is water projects. You know, I'm one of those that believes we need to get the FM diversion in place, get it so that the dollars are there so they can finish that project, because that amount of money, I think it was around $435 million is what's still needed. You know, the state share, I think we put $750 million in, yet, you know, that we made obligations saying we're going to do $66.5 million a biennium. Well, they were looking for $120 million more for $170. And so part of that bill is to fill that commitment, but get those dollars so they could be available for bonding so they can get that project going. I know it'll take a few years to get that done, but if we can get that off the table, then we can start looking bigger into Red River water supply. We can look at, because that's going to bring water to a lot of rural communities, depending on local matches. So FM is such a big project, it's kind of holding us back what we need to do on others. I myself am kind of tired of doing a little bit here and there. Let's get FM diversion off the way and start working on these other projects.
Yeah, and other projects could be like Minot flood control too, as well as the Red River Valley Water Supply Project. Maybe some improvements to Western Area Water Systems is what I've been hearing a little bit about, and maybe some more with the Southwest Pipeline Project.
And actually, Dave, part of that $798 million, it gets that money to the FM diversion for that access. It also helps us with WAS. It helps us get to the Minot, and I don't want to say the Minot area, yeah, flood control. Yeah. And I think if we can get that done right, it would complete phases 1 through 3 or 1 through 4. And they need that to continue because they're shovel ready. And so we need to work on that. So that bill would address, that bonding bill would address that, but besides money being available for bridges, some highway construction. I know it's not as much as what some people want, but yeah, no, it's there. So
one other issue I wanted to talk about just briefly is the governor's executive powers. There's been a flurry of bills that have been introduced to ratchet back on that, to have the legislature more involved, to have a virtual special session to deal with some of the issue if you have another pandemic. How do you feel things are going on that? Which way do you see it moving?
You know, those bills, Dave, are being heard now. There was one bill brought forward by Representative Devlin that's in the Human Services Policy Committee, and that's where it needs to be, because the State Health Council and a lot of those dealt with health issues just because of COVID-19. I know there's a bill in the GVA House GVA Committee, and I think Senator Murdahl has a bill in the Senate. So there's a number of those out there. You know, some of them say, okay, the executive order can be in place for 60 days, and then the governor would have to get authorization to go past 60 days, and we would be involved every 30 days to be called in, you know. And there are bills out there with some appropriations members saying that the governor would have the discretion up to like $100 million. Anything over that, we would have to be able to come in special session and look at those, you know. So there's a number of those bills that are coming forward because of the last years dealing with COVID-19 with the CARES Act, because as you know as well too, Dave, CARES Act 2, and there looks like in another 3 to 4 weeks or 5 weeks, there'll be basically a CARES Act 3 with the new administration in there. So it's going to take some heavy lifting for us to get those things allocated out and try and help those branches of industry that have taken a hit, whether it's hotels, restaurants, you know, or whether it's our local public health units because they're have to work on through these vaccines, or whether it's our K-12 system, you know, because everybody's been impacted by that. But with the executive orders, a lot of folks had to shut down for a while. Now, we have obligations there, I feel, to try and help those systems through that. And truthfully, during the interim, of course, the emergency commission met and budget section met. Myself and Senator Warder had, I can't count the number of phone calls and conference calls we had with Governor Burgum, Lieutenant Governor Sanford, and all his staff, and saying, okay, where can this go? There were legislators in both the House and the Senate, as an example, that spent a lot of time with the Bank of North Dakota trying to figure out, you know, loans and grants, where it should go, how it should be implemented for them during this time. So there was a lot of work done, but yet there was a feeling of legislators that more should be involved when we're talking $1 billion, you know, instead of six of us on the emergency commission and the 54 and budget section, that all the 141 legislators should have more of a voice. And so this is what that's attempting to do.
You said that there might be a COVID or a CARES Act 3, we want to call it that, potentially coming our way. How is that going to impact decisions you're going to be making this session? I know it's too early to see what the amount might be, but it might have an impact on what you can or cannot do.
Well, Dave, we don't know what those dollars are going to be. We hear a lot of rumors, and yet at the same time, both the House and Senate Appropriations Committees are meeting, going through all the budgets, trying to figure out where they're at. Yet, I don't say we're not on hold because those committees are meeting and talking. Yet we know there's going to be some dollars going somewhere to some of this stuff. So we've got to be ready for that as all. So I have a feeling what'll happen somewhere, you know, towards the end of February, we might hear, but we will probably, in order to get the crossover, have to get some budgets done, knowing full well when they get to the other chamber that those numbers could change pretty drastically. You know, but we also understand, it will, but we also have to remember these dollars aren't going to, because I have concerns with all the money that the federal government is throwing out here too. And we've got to look at those as one-time funding. We can't put them as an ongoing expense for those agencies or for those appropriations, because those dollars aren't going to be there in the future. So we've got to make sure we're spending that money wisely, because they aren't going to allow us to throw it into the safe and our reserve somewhere. You know, it's going to be expended. But we also know hotels are at the best. I know where I'm staying at here during, they're lucky if they're 10, 15% occupied, maybe 20%, you know, normally through the winter time with basketball tournaments and wrestling, those folks are 75 to 100% full. And that's just not happening. So we've got to continue to address that.
I'm going to throw a little curveball at you just because we've been talking about a little bit on the air for a couple of days. Representative Ben Koppelman has that bill to do a $40 million addition to the legislative wing. And I assume you've kind of looked at it. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Here's what I'll say, because Dave, I've been working so much on the bonding bill. One thing we have to, and it'll sound like I'm changing subjects, but this is one of the most core things that we've got to come out with, is how do we continue Coal Creek Station? How do we continue? Because I'm one of those who firmly believes that the baseline for electricity is going to be coal. And so in with the new administration, but this started before then too, we're going to have low carbon you know, with what we're working for energy. And we've got about four or five, maybe seven or eight major bills that we're going to have to pass and have in place. So we get prepared for 2, 3, 4, 5 years down the road to get ready for carbon capture, carbon sequestration, you know, so we got to have research funds in place. We're trying to help the coal industry because they're having a tough time now. I think Coal Creek is very important for us to keep that going. So I've been spending most of my time with Senator Wardner talking about those issues more than the $40 million addition at the Capitol. So that's not high on my priority list, Dave. I just got to be honest with you right now, and I'll get a chance to look at that later. But you know, with what we're going through with COVID-19, and a lot of folks were finding out can work from home, you know, some of that creates some challenges. I know the Ag Department needs to be in person working. You know, those folks do a lot of on-scene inspections, whether it's in the ag industry or whether it's at your gas stations or anything like that, you know, or the PSC is the same way. So in order to check metering devices, scales, you know, inspections, those folks got to be able to work on hand. But we also found out a lot of folks can work from home. So guess what? We got a lot of empty space in the Capitol. And so we've used those for offices because there's a lot of legislators here that have underlying conditions and aren't comfortable being around with a lot of folks right now. You know, I know the positivity cases are dropping, but we have to be careful about them. So we've got them offices. But there's a lot of office space up here. So we have to take a look at that, as well as look at Representative Koppelman's bill dealing with additions. So that's changed.
I'm also glad you brought up Coal Creek, because there's been rumors that there might be a potential buyer for the plant. I don't know how close you've been involved in the negotiations. Is there a potential buyer or two that you know of?
You know, right now, Dave, what I'll say, there are a lot of ongoing discussions going on with a lot of folks. I'm fairly optimistic, really optimistic, that there will be something done. But we also have to realize also, as an example, Great River Energy has Coal Creek right now. You know, they got an ethanol plant in. Great River Energy has been a good partner for the state of North Dakota. They're part of the Dakota Ag ethanol plant at Spiritwood. They've got the transmission plant at Spiritwood. There's talk of someone hopefully going to build a soybean plant. If we can get those things done, then that helps us bring a diesel manufacturing facility out to Dickinson, and in line with one of the oil companies. I mean, so Great River Energy's been a good partner, but Coal Creek has been a challenge for them. So they're aggressively looking at a partner. So those negotiations have to happen between those folks. And I know there's talks going on, and I know Lieutenant Governor Sanford's been involved in that pretty heavily. Senator Wardner and myself have been, you know, we got legislation out there. It's kind of created a stir. But we'll work through that. That's the way this legislative process, as you know, Dave, comes out. It's really ugly, like sausage being made. And we're hoping we got a good product that's going to keep Coal Creek Station open. We're hoping we keep them 600 or 800 employees working. We're hoping coal, because coal, I firmly believe, is a baseline part of power. But I also realize, you know, this whole country is changing with renewables. Those have to be part of that process. And that's important. There's a lot of folks that say, no, that's not true. I can't speak for Senator Wardner, but I will say Senator Wardner and I both agree that we've got to keep that going. So those discussions got to be ongoing for both green and black electrons, because that's what's good for the state.
Yeah, and we probably will see something soon, because the plant is supposed to shut down in 2022. but you hear signs that there might be ways now with the state maybe, you know, investing something, some research dollars into carbon capture, carbon sequestration, using the carbon for enhanced oil recovery, or just storing carbon underground. There are opportunities out here.
Dave, there are a lot of opportunities, and so it's all a piece of a big pie that we have to, when we leave here, and I'm hoping we don't have to shut down for a quarantine, so I'm optimistic saying when we leave here the latter part of April, we better have a plan in place that has these jobs going there, you know, so that's a challenge for us. But today, Dave, I'm feeling fairly confident about that. But we've got a lot of hurdles to go through. There's a lot of folks that got some angst about everything, but that's the way this legislative process goes. I mean, there gets to be some heated debates going on. So, but we have to work through that.
But of course, debates heated that are on the issues are really illustrative at times and very fun for us to listen to.
Well, if you're involved in the middle of that thing, Dave, and you're one of those that's in that eye-to-eye contact and debating, sometimes that gets tough because you're dealing with people here. Legislators get to be friends. But boy, I tell you what, though, you can talk about water fights. You can talk about energy fights right now. And I'm talking mentally, you know, and verbally, but that puts a strain on some of these relationships. It really does.
Well, Representative Pollard, thank you for the time.
You bet, Dave. I appreciate this. You know, right. Dave, I'm fine. It's always good to talk with you.
Love talking to you too. Thank you so much. This has been Legislative Review on Prairie Public on our radio and digital platforms. I'm Dave Thompson. Thanks for joining us.